This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. In this portion of the program, we'll take a look at why the Tower of Pisa is what it is, an architectural icon. Construction of the bell tower began in 1173. It was almost 200 years later that it was completed. Well before its completion, it began to tilt, but there it is today. My guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine is writer Nicholas Schrady. He is the author of what he calls a skewed history of the tower, the title Tilt, A Skewed History of the Tower of Pisa. In the introduction to the book, Schrady marvels at its longevity. He reminds us that the Tower of Pisa, quoting here, has stood as silent witness to the rise and fall of a maritime republic, to victory, glory, treachery, schism, defeat, decadence, and finally, newfound prominence. Nicholas Schrady joins us this afternoon from Chicago, where this evening he will be at the Newberry Library at 6 p.m. to give a lecture. That's this evening at 6 o'clock in Chicago at the Newberry Library. Nicholas Schrady, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
When did the tower begin to tilt?
Well, virtually from the get-go. The difficulty arose on account of the fact that the campanile or bell tower is essentially built on terrain that was formerly a bog. So the subsoil is extremely unstable, and the edifice is very weighty with a very insubstantial foundation. So it began to tilt when they'd already reached the third story, 5 years after it was construction started.
Yeah. So it's really amazing that the tower has survived all these years, its tilt and everything else.
Well, it's absolutely miraculous. It's survived war, seismic activity. If you'll recall the earthquake in Assisi several years ago, which destroyed a good number of architectural monuments, monasteries, convents, and frescoes, and all sorts of things. That area of Tuscany has a lot of seismic activity, but it's never really affected the Tower of Pisa. So it is an absolutely resilient building. One wouldn't think so looking at it, but it survived.
Yeah. The Tower of Pisa is, of course, a famous tourist site. When did tourists begin traveling to Pisa to look at the tower?
Well, I think that the international recognition of the tower began with the Grand Tour in the early 19th century, late 18th century perhaps, particularly with British travelers who were very eager, I think, to flee the nasty weather in Great Britain and head to the continent. And they were the ones that brought the tower to newfound prominence.
Mm. And also famous poets and artists, and there's a story that Galileo, before the Pisa Circle, that Galileo conducted experiments from the top of the tower.
Well, I certainly recall from my elementary science class and textbook that there was the Galileo atop the tower, you know, holding these two different size balls, and the images vary actually. But there's nothing to suggest in Galileo's writing or in the writing of any of his contemporaries that he conducted such experiments from the tower. That myth was begun by Galileo's biographer and was taken up by almost every other biographer who came along. And the reason, I think, is that it's such a compelling image and such an easy image to explain the notion of falling bodies. But when Galileo was in Pisa, he was born in Pisa, but he was a very junior mathematics professor, and there's nothing to suggest in his writings that he conducted those experiments from the tower. It's a myth, but a very long-lived one.
How do the people of Pisa feel about their tower, and over the years have they played a role in its story and what we think we know about the tower?
Well, in Italian, campanilismo is a word for local pride, and every town is terribly proud of their campanile. But certainly, early on, the Pisans were anything but content with their tower. You know, a flawed edifice that was nothing to be particularly proud of. It's only after this the kind of Grand Tour and visitors reaching Pisa in the 18th and 19th century that it began to take on a very popular image, and suddenly people were traveling specifically to Pisa to see the tower, and the Pisans became rather more fond of their tower.
Construction began in 1173, completed in 1370. Did the vision of what the tower was to look like change over all that time?
Well, no one ever expected the tower to be leaning, but there was kind of very, very little that they could do about it. I think that the vision of the tower was meant to complement the other buildings in the Campo dei Miracoli, the cathedral square. And that conjunction of buildings includes the Duomo, or cathedral, the baptistry, the Campo Santo cemetery, and the tower. Sometimes I think it's a great pity that everyone goes rushing off to look at the tower for its lean, because it takes people away from the extraordinary beauty of the other buildings in that square. So the tower's notoriety is also, I think, something of a curse.
Has it ever come really close to toppling?
Well, yes, extremely close. Most of those who have professed a desire to quote-unquote, save the tower have usually been the ones who have come closest to toppling it. For example, in the 19th century, there was a local architect named Alessandro della Geradesca who believed that it was necessary to excavate a walkway around the base of the tower. And workers began to dig, and they hit a subterranean water channel. And the entire ground floor of the campanile began to flood, and the tower began to lurch, and it very nearly toppled.
And, of course, there was a threat or two to the tower during World War II. Mussolini and the fascists were interested in the tower, and then, with the Allies rumbling through and bombing and whatnot.
Well, right. Pisa was the site of very heavy Allied bombing during World War II. But for that point, the Mussolini and the fascists, they were not very keen on a leaning tower, and Mussolini ordered it shored up, and their solution was rather as brutal as fascist politics. They drilled 361 holes into the foundation and proceeded to pump it with 90 tons of cement. I should mention that Mussolini was the owner of the cement factory. So maybe that was the reason for that solution. But yet again, that intervention disturbed, a very hard-found equilibrium that the tower had established. And it's yet another example of people tinkering with the tower and nearly toppling it. But the fact that it got through World War II, virtually unscathed, it came very near to being shelled by U.S. guns, because they thought the Germans were using it as a lookout tower. In the end, they desisted and nothing happened. But the only actual hit that the tower took during World War II was a hit by Italian anti-aircraft guns. That they were took very bad aim, I think, and managed to hit the tower. So that's the only the hit it took during wartime. But that can't be said, for example, of the Campo Santo Cemetery hard by the tower. An incendiary bomb hit the Campo Santo, and fantastic frescoes were ruined and lost forever.
Yeah. At the outset of the book, you say, I think this is really fascinating, you say that the tale of the tower is the story of our relationship, man's relationship with monumental architecture, and his need to first to think about it, to conceive it and build it, and then later to say what it all means, and to keep doing that over and over and over again, to appropriate and condition the architecture to suit the tenor of the times.
Right. Well, virtually every epoch or virtually every generation has appropriated the tower for its own needs. Certainly, the original builders and planners conceived of the bell tower and these other buildings in the square as a sign of peace and power and prestige and military and commercial prowess. Later on, of course, that was anything but the case. You know, the fascists viewed it as a rather an eyesore that needed to be fixed. The Romantic poets and Byron and Shelley were in Pisa in the early 19th century, and they saw it as a sign of decadence and a lost golden age. Until we get to the contemporary setting, and Pisa is now the primary commodity of the tower is the primary commodity of Pisa. It's really the monument on which virtually the entire local economy depends. Mm. So the role of the tower has changed, and according to how each generation has kind of appropriated it and interpreted it.
Yeah. We have to wrap up here, I'm sorry to say, but seeing as you're in the Chicago area, I wonder if you've been out to the suburb of Niles to see the replica.
I have indeed. On the way here this morning, my minder, Bill Young, was good enough to take me by there. It's absolutely extraordinary. It's a little squat, not only skewed, but it's a little shorter than the actual tower. But this building got built, I think, is absolutely extraordinary. I would love to kind of, you know, maybe stay at that Y one day and be in the shadows of the tower.
Yeah. Well, I saw it many, many times when I was a child going past on the highway, Interstate 90 there, on my way to my grandmother's house, and I always wanted my parents to stop there, but they would never do it. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon, Nicholas. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Nicholas Schrady has been my guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine. He is the author of Tilt, A Skewed History of the Tower of Pisa. It's available in paperback from Penguin Books. Tonight, the 19th of January at 6 o'clock, he'll be at the Newbery Library in Chicago. That's 6 p.m. this evening. It's a free event, and he will give a lecture and also sign books. Nicholas Schrady, Tilt, A Skewed History of the Tower of Pisa.